We are now delighted to be joined by a man who won arguably the greatest Open of all time in 1977.
I just look out and say, you know, Jack, this is what it's all about.
Oh, would you believe that?
Tom was just a guy that I knew that you weren't going to shake.
They're level with three to play.
They were fighting for the claret jug like they had never won one before.
If one got a lead, immediately the other one came back at him.
Very quickly, it became the jewel in the sun.
Was I nervous? Yeah, sure I was nervous, playing against Jack.
Who knows, Jack may hold this. Can't be, can it?
You know, I stand over a lot of putts and I just say, you've got to make this. It's got to go in. And I made it.
I can remember the gasp of wonder that went up.
Everybody roared as if he still had the winning of the Open.
The roar was like a jet engine and it didn't stop.
I'd be hard pressed to find any moment that could define the greatness of competition than the duel in the sun.
Just incredible. I mean, the duel in the sun in 77 is the jewel in my sporting crown, that's for sure.
This for the championship.
I went into it thinking, this is mine to lose.
Well, Tom Watson, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you into our cosy little studio. 45 years on, how vivid are your memories of that incredible week?
Well, they're still very vivid. I loved the challenge that week. I was playing very, very good golf going into it, so I was really thinking I had a good chance to win. And as it turned out, Jack and I were tied after 36 holes. We were paired together on Saturday. We both go out and we shoot 65 on Saturday, and then the real shootout really began on Sunday.
And we were just chatting before you came in, saying how that particular duel embodied everything about the sport, what it means. Matthew, as a pro himself, can understand that. It did have everything, didn't it?
Well, it had a lot to it. The final round, it was like a prize fight. That Jack, he threw some hard punches, throughout the round, and I responded with a lucky putt at 15 from off the green punched back, and then he let me in. He let me in on 17 when he missed a short putt for birdie, and I had made birdie there to go one shot up on him. So. But his punching wasn't over, because 18, after almost hitting it an unplayable lie to the right in the gorse, he hit this wonderful shot out of the terrible lie in the rough. I went over and actually looked at the lie to see what type of options I had as far as my shot before I played my second shot. And he was literally 3 inches from being unplayable. But he was also in deep grass. He was in 4 or 5 inches of grass in a deep line. But knowing Jack and how he's the best rough player has ever been in the sport because of his upright swing, I knew if there's one person to get out of that lie, it was going to be Jack Nicklaus. And so I go back and I play my shot, and I had a wonderful shot. The ball was coming down just right on the stack. I didn't know how close it was, but I knew by the reaction of the crowd it was pretty close. I never knew how close it really was until I broke through the crowd. And then I walked up after playing my second shot. Jack hit this shot out of the rough. And I'm not sure what he – I think he hit a 9-iron or something. And he had a swath of grass about a foot long that was hanging on the edge of and the end of his club in the follow-through, just whoosh, like this. And here comes the ball out. It starts to tumble. He has no spin on it because it's in the rough. And I said, now, it could miss it to the right. There's a slope there, and it goes up there. Nope, it bounced straight, and we went up on the green. I said, okay, game's still on here. Yeah. Even though he was on the green, he was 35 feet from the hole.
Good morning. How did you refocus for your shot? Because it was an incredible shot you hit into the 72nd green after Jack had done all those heroics. What is your mindset at that moment when you know you've got this shot and the title's on the line?
Well, the very simple thing is, before I didn't know how close my ball was to the hole until I broke through the crowd.
But before that, and the shot into the green, yeah.
Well, again, when Jack hit it on the green, I knew that, you know, the game was still on. I had to make my putt. Yeah, that's the one thing that I had in my mind. I didn't know how long the putt was.
Right.
That ended up being 2.5 feet. But I knew Jack was going to make it. I'm walking up there with Alfie Files, my caddy, and Alf looks up at me. He said, "Well, you've got him now, mister. You've got him now." And I said, "Alf, he's going to hole this putt." And Alf looked at me kind of cross-eyed. He said, "What?" And I said, you know, to myself, Jack Nicklaus always makes a birdie in the last hole of a major championship. So, and sure enough, when Jack stood over his putt right there, I said, "Yeah, this is probably going to go in." And 10 feet from the hole, I knew it was in. And when it went in the hole, it would have gone into a thimble. It went into such a dead center right in the middle of the hole. And the crowd roar was just like a jet engine, as you heard. It was just, and it continued. They didn't stop. You know, I was ready to put my two and a half footer in. So they didn't stop. So I said, "Heck with this. I don't care if you're still yelling for Jack. I'm ready to play." So I went down and put my ball down behind my ball marker, picked up the ball marker, and as I was lifting up, off to my corner to the right over here was Jack. And he put his hands up in the air like this. And only in this sport, only in golf, that airplane crowd noise in 3 seconds went to silence. It was incredible how quickly the crowd went silent. Wow. And I knocked it in. Walking off the green, he said something to me that really meant a great deal to my career. He grabbed me around the neck and kind of gave me a half Nelson. He looked at me and he said, "Tom, I gave you my best shot, but it wasn't good enough. Congratulations. I'm really happy for you."
That is one of the great quotes. We're so pleased, Tom, that you can stay with us for just a few minutes' time. Matthew Southgate's also here. We'll have to let you into a little secret in a moment with regard to his middle name. Paul Eales is here too. I'm Marcus Buckland. We've also got Carl Paulson and Sophie Walker out on the course watching Scheffler, Neiman and Hatton. Let's get a quick update from them.
Yeah, Scheffler just putting for birdie now, coming down the hill, breaking from right to left. This is on a good line, just misses on that left-hand side. He'll have to settle for par and remain 3 under.
Thank you, Carl. Now, Tom, your influence is considerable. No surprise, bearing in mind the jewel in the sun, the fact that you're a 5-time Open champion, an 8-time major winner. And, Matthew, your middle name is Tom.
Yes, you were definitely my dad's favourite ever golfer, Tom. He took a lot of pleasure coming to the Open Championship, especially and following you. He was a member over at Carnoustie, and you know how well loved you are there, Tom. And we've all followed your career for years. So I have the honour of having your first name as my middle name, which is pretty cool.
And you were saying before Tom came in that it's battles such as the one that Tom has so vividly described that inspired you to become a golfer because of what the sport means. It's not just about winning and losing, but it's that fantastic sportsmanship that develops as well.
Absolutely, you know, and I think there's a few guys in the modern game that feel the same as me with that. You know, it's one thing being a great player, and it's another thing being a great competitor. But to be able to do that as a gentleman is something that, you know, I take a lot of pride in myself. And growing up watching the footage of Tom and Jack and Tiger as well, you know, it's an amazing sport in that respect, you know, and to be able to be on that golf course for as long as we are, all trying to beat each other, but then shake hands at the end of it. And as Tom just explained there about the jewel in the sun, you'll never see better sporting footage shown with better sportsmanship, you know. And Jack Nicklaus had it in abundance. Tom, you had it yourself, and it's given us so much pleasure to watch over the years, and I think that's why so many people are so proud of you guys, because you really set that level.
Yeah, and it continues, and we're watching at the moment, by the way, Dustin Johnson, who's out on the course, and Tiger Woods is around about 25 or 30 minutes away from going out. And we know, Tom, that yesterday he had his troubles, very unlucky with the tee shot, which landed in the divot and led to him going into the burn. At 46, physically, he's been through a lot. But as you showed us back in 2009, at the age of 59, age doesn't have to be a barrier to open success, or very near open success, at least?
Well, Tiger is obviously, he has a physical disability. He has, his leg is very compromising to his golf swing. And but fortunately, I give credit to my mom and dad. I have great genes. I was rarely ever hurt, maybe a stiff neck here or there, but rarely ever hurt. So I could play, free. I was always pretty loose. I had a long golf swing, so it got a little bit shorter the older I got. But, I lifted my left heel off the ground, so I didn't put a lot of pressure in my back. As the kids do today, they keep the left heel down and they really twist their lower spine, and I think they'll probably have some repercussions of that. But I've been very fortunate to be able to play long into my long in the tooth years.
Absolutely, you had a fantastic career, and you're still looking as fit as a fiddle. And I don't want to dwell on the near misses, but again, this has got a Jack Nicklaus connotation. After you came so close in 2009, I've heard the story that you go back to your hotel room, you don't really want to talk to anybody, and then the phone rings. What happened next?
Yeah, it's a wonderful story about camaraderie and friendship. Back in the hotel room, Hillary gets a phone call from Barbara Nicklaus. "Hi, Babs," she said. "Yeah, okay." "Oh, okay, just a second." She says, she hands me the phone and says, "Jack wants to talk to you." And so Jack gets on the phone, and he describes, "I won the tournament and all this." "No, I didn't win the tournament, Jack." He said, "Well, you beat everybody in the field." "No, I didn't beat everybody in the field." He was really trying to console me. And then he talks to me about the last hole. He said, "You hit a perfect shot off the tee, your second shot. If it stops 6 inches shorter, you two-putt and win easy." And then he said, "The chip shot, you hit the right shot there. You hit the proper shot there, putting the ball rather than chipping the ball." And then he said, "The putt, well, you hit it like the rest of us would have hit it, you dog." And there he is. He's making me laugh in a very low time. And all I'm saying is that what a friend to be able to know how hurt I was and to be able to help console me, which he did. He just called me up and just, he knew how I was feeling. He knew the feeling that I, the exact feeling that I was feeling at the time. And he said, "I'm going to help my friend out."
Well, fortunately, the highs greatly outweighed the lows. I'm going to just go back one more time to a near miss here. 1984, which is of course remembered for the Seve fisted celebration, mm-hmm. on the 18th at around about the same time.
I watched that.
You actually saw that?
I was from the 17th green. Yeah. I just hit it on the road and pitched it off the road. I had a tough shot and I got it on the green. I had about a 20 footer for par, and I was still level with Seve at the time. And before I putted my putt, I was lining it up and I hear this huge cheer at 18. I look up all the way up the fairway, and I see that fist pump. I said, "Uh-oh, I better make this putt or I'm out of this thing." And I didn't make the putt. I hit a pretty good putt, but it didn't go in. And so I was right there in the action.
Tom, I'm fortunate enough to be a member of Royal Birkdale, and the members obviously talk about the great two-iron into 18. So you've hit a lot of fantastic shots in your career, coming down the stretch, under pressure. Where would that shot in at Birkdale count in 83?
Yeah, that's one of the top shots I've ever played. The long irons are, for most most people, the toughest irons to hit. And at that time, I had a one-shot lead playing the last hole in the Open Championship at Birkdale. And playing into the wind, a good, firm, left and right, into the wind shot. And I hit a great drive. But it left me with a two iron. I had 215 yards of it, I believe, and I hit this two iron. And I remember vividly the ball started to draw into the crosswind like this, and my caddy Alf says, "Stop turning." He said, "Don't worry, Alf," because it went up there and the wind banked it back, and that ball came right down toward the top of the flag, which I never saw, because the crowd enveloped before the ball landed. I could not, I didn't see the ball land because the crowd had just rushed in like the Red Sea came back together right there. I never saw the ball land. I didn't know how close the ball was. I knew it was somewhere on the green, I think, because it had to be on the green. Didn't know how close it was until I broke through the crowd to see it was about 15 feet from the hole.
Brilliant. So, I mean, obviously a quick learner. You win your first Open in 75 on your first trip. How did you learn the wind game? I mean, we talk about it in the UK with our seaside courses, and you've got to be able to keep the ball down and maneuver it. Was that part of something you had growing up?
Well, the first year I played in the Open was at Carnoustie. There was no wind the first 3 days. I mean, it was limp flags.
Wow.
But the last day, it blew. It blew hard from the south. And the playoff with Jack Newton on the fifth day, it blew really hard from the north, so the golf course completely changed. And so it was understanding what the wind could do then, but more so, actually the strongest the wind ever blew out here for four consecutive days was at Birkdale. I want to say, was it 2008? It blew 25 miles an hour or stronger. Every day. Mm. It was as tough wind conditions that I ever played in, consistent wind conditions in an Open Championship.
And so was it just experience that gave you the knowledge how to maneuver the ball in the wind, or did somebody teach you that? How does that come about with such skills?
Well, Matthew knows you. It's a sense of feel. You have to feel it. There are three things when you have a ball in the fairway, you're trying to hit a shot. What are the three things in order that you must think about before you play the shot? What's the first thing you have to think about?
The lie?
Yeah, exactly. You're a smart man. The second thing is how far you have, the yardage. Third thing is the wind. Now, that's where the judgment and the art form of this golf game comes in. The player, what is the wind going to do? And especially on links golf courses, the fourth is how far is that ball going to roll? How far is it going to take off? If you're downwind, that ball could roll. Well, you look at 14 tee ball at the Old Course here. That ball can roll 150 yards. I mean, it just doesn't stop rolling. So you have to back off hitting your drive at 14. It's 400 yards or 380 yards at the end of the fairway there, and guys are hitting irons off the tee 350 yards. So you have to judge that part of it, that element too. So that's the beauty of links golf to me, that I didn't like at the beginning. I as an American golfer, that ball stopped when I hit the ground. And when I came over here, I didn't like links golf. That ball didn't stop. You had to learn how to control your distance. I did pretty good at
you did all right.
Good. So yeah, right.
Just did all right. And we'll take those five open wins and a few near misses as well. We've just watched Harris English, Louis Oosthuizen, and Keita Nakajima tee off. Of course, Oosthuizen knows how to win around here.
He does.
Could you just take us into your thought process when you're on the first tee at St Andrews, the home of golf? Everybody knows the first, the second, the 17th, and the 18th. But how do you compartmentalize what the challenges are going to be to you over the 4 or 5 hours at St Andrews in particular?
Well, you're here, speculating on the whole day. We golfers, on the first hole, what are we thinking about? We're thinking about how far is the burn on the left side and the right side there, and how far do we want that ball to go, and what club with the wind conditions we'll hit the ball to where we want it to go. That's the only thing we're thinking about off the first tee. We're not thinking about anything else in the whole round of golf. It's just the first tee, get it started, hit a good shot out there. Don't get unlucky like Tiger got yesterday when he put it in a divot and then dumped it in the burn in front of the green. But that's the luck. That's the luck of the game. You think a shot at a time. You don't think ahead.
Adam Scott's just birdied 5 to go to 2 under. We've touched on Tiger. Is it asking too much of him going out at 9:58 this morning to shoot a good enough round to be here for the weekend, do you think?
Well, I think everybody's hoping that he's going to shoot a good round to get here the weekend, obviously. It's going to be a tough go.
Yeah, well, we shall follow his progress. Did you get a chance to see much of the golf yesterday? Cameron Young, of course, atop the leaderboard, and the likes of Cameron Smith and Rory McIlroy very much in the mix after day one.
I really didn't. I didn't have a chance to. I was going around to the various places to meet and greet people at the Rolex and the MasterCard and R&A. Did a lot of that. Ate some really fine food, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it. You know, met a lot of good people.
Tom, one of my favorite moments of the day yesterday was when the amateur Barclay Brown, who qualified at Hollingwell, managed to open up with a 68. He shot 4 under par. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to touch on 2011 at St. George's. You played the opening two rounds with a good friend of mine, Tom Lewis.
Yeah.
And Tom done something quite similar and opened up with a 65 that week. And I just wanted to ask you about your opinion on how great the silver medal is for the amateur and what it means to see these young guys come through and give it their shot in the big time.
Well, I remember when I was a kid that I was always playing in the Western Amateur, and I was told if you finished in the top 8 in the Western Amateur, in the match play part of it, that the Western Open would give you an invitation to play. And I kept on asking about that, and finally they gave me an invitation to play in the Western Open, first professional tournament I ever played in. And I remember that experience, that feeling that you had. You know, it's not like the Open Championship, but it still, for me, was my first professional tournament, and the feeling that I had, the excitement I had to go and play. And it was Tommy Lewis was he played wonderful golf, and he did, and I was very impressed by him.
Yeah, well, we've always known that here at St. Andrews in particular, and Robert Dinwiddie, who qualified a week or so ago, was in our studio a couple of days ago. He had a fantastic round yesterday, so we're itching to see how he gets on. Another thing I'd like to ask you about, because you've mentioned caddies a couple of times, and obviously the relationship that you had with your caddies over the years. How important is that relationship, particularly when you're playing a tough round on a links course?
Well, your caddy can give you some information. If that caddy's been on that links course before and knows it, you know, they can help you. You know, I really didn't rely very much on my caddy earlier on in my career to read the putts for me. Later on, I did, because I found out that Bruce Edwards, my caddy from America, was a great putter. And we had a few contests early on. And I said, this guy can putt. And I started to, you know, let him in, so to speak. I said, all right, Bruce, what do you think this does? You know, if I had maybe a question on my line of the putt, which I never did before, never asked him before. And he started, and, you know, he was spot on. And he started, and kind of he remained spot on. And so, you know, that was a great relationship with Bruce and me. When, you know, I could rely on him for putting, and he knew my game well enough to, you know, to pick a club. You know, what do you think it? You know, I said, what do you think? And he'll say, it's a 6-iron. And most of the time, he was right. It was the right club. And most of the time, I had a club in mind. My first choice, and you know, most of the time, he was right on that first choice of mine.
Well, it's good when you can have that sort of trust. Let's just have a look for a moment at Taylor Gooch, who's had a terrific start today. He's got a birdie opportunity on 9. Now, Paul, we've mentioned Marcus Armitage, who's had a terrific front 9 out in 33. Siwoo Kim out in 35. And Taylor Gooch has nudged himself up to a position of joint second. So an opportunity now to go into second place by himself.
Yeah, he has. He's just picking his way around. Birdied the first, birdied the third, all pars after that. And the ninth really is a giveaway hole for these guys, hitting it so far. But no wind today. No wind. There was a crosswind from right to left yesterday. But most of the lads were banging it on the green or just around about and two putting. So looks around about 15 feet here. It's on its way. And that's a good front side. Tom, would you agree on that? 2 under par.
This course is it's going to give up some low scores today. It's softer. It's not raining all that hard. But if it was, you know, I saw a few putts early come up short with the moisture in the greens. But the you know, one of the things that you see, actually, what you really don't talk enough about, honestly, I'm just giving you a little heads up here, are the flag positions on the greens. how tough they are. Mm. Matthew, you know what I'm talking about. You know, the first hole today, that the flag position is just over the burn. It's 5 yards over the burn. Mm. And, you know, here we are. You know, they're opening shot. Now, do I want to get aggressive with this and get it close? Because I've only got a wedge in my hand. Or do I play a little safe and I hit it 20 or 30 feet past the hole? Just, let's don't take any risk in this opening shot. And some of these guys have been dumping it in the mm-hmm. in the burn right in front. Yeah, you know, yeah. You know, they say, well, I can get it in there. You know, that'll ruin your round. And that's what the flag positions here can do. Like a 13, the front left pin position right over that that crevice right in front there. What a tough pin position that is.
Yeah, they had it yesterday over the bunker on the right as well, so nobody could get anywhere near that.
Talk about that a lot, because if your listeners, that's descriptive of how we have to, how difficult it is. Yeah, the holes play a certain distance and all this, but the flag positions are the most important things.
Well, back on the first Nakajima, the amateur has got a lengthy birdie putt. It's on its way. Paul?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to make the distance. But again, like you were saying there, Tommy's obviously taken it, you know, knock it 10 yards past the hole, he's safe, and hopefully two putt and move on to number two.
It's funny, actually, you should mention the importance of pin positions, because Matthew, every morning as we wake up, he's already texted the pin positions, and apparently he's got a few friends on a WhatsApp chat wherever they are in the world, irrespective of whether anyone else is interested in the tournament that they're at. You're sending pin positions out, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a running joke between a few of us, Henrik Stenson's caddy, Gareth Lord, myself, and a few other guys that are on the tour. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, the first thing you do is wake up and send each other the pin locations.
Because you know, you're inside the curtain, you know where those pins are, and know how it makes the holes play. Here's my dark horse right here.
Ah, yes, Patrick Harrington.
He's my dark horse.
Well, he's three under.
He's playing very well. He just won the U.S. Senior Open. And he told me confidentially at the Champions Dinner on Tuesday night here, he said, I'm putting really well. putting well. And when you're putting well, that relieves you of a lot of stress.
He certainly picked up some length, Tom, hasn't he? Certainly for the senior game, he's hitting it long. And we mentioned that yesterday with Matt Fitzpatrick, mm-hmm. who won the U.S. Open a couple of weeks ago. Just that extra length that they need to have to compete these days. Was that always the case when you were playing? Was length such a huge factor? Back in the days when you were winning championships?
Matthew, you know, length is always a huge factor. If you're the longest out here, you have the advantage, bottom line.
We'll talk in a moment, if we may, about that Champions Dinner, get a little flavour of what was going on, and also the Champions celebration that you're involved in. I know you haven't got too long to stay with us, but very quickly we must go back to Carl and to Sophie.
Yeah, world number one with a birdie putt out here at the par 5. He hit it just short and right of the green. Sophie left his chip about 12 feet short.
Yeah, he was looking to catch the slope at the left-hand side of this flag and just came much short of it. So he's got 20 feet here for birdie, left to right, and leaves it high of the hole. So missed opportunity for Scotty Scheffler on one of the easiest holes on the golf course.
Back to you guys.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Sophie. We've only got 3 or 4 more minutes with Tom. Just a word about the start of the week. There was the four-hole celebration. There was the Champions Dinner on Tuesday night. Everybody was craning their necks as you guys went out and had your photographs taken. Can you give us a little insight into what that dinner was like?
Well, the dinner was pretty emotional. Jack got up and spoke and said that it might be his last time here at St. Andrews. I think it hit everybody hard, as far as here he is. I know when I played golf and asked to play with Jack in his last round of the Open Championship in 2005, how I felt playing with the greatest that ever played the game, play the last round of his Open Championship. And I was crying like a baby coming up the 18th hole. And we go to the Swillican Bridge. Jack makes his final farewell at the bridge with his hand up in the air. Very quickly, all the photographers are there. He wasn't there more than a minute. And he said, come on, everybody, come on, let's all get a shot on the bridge. And so we all got up there and took a shot. And then he left the bridge and he started walking to the fairway. And Luke and I, we held our ground. We let Jack take the final walk up there by himself. And I was crying like a baby, literally. Mm-hmm. And so we walk behind him 30 or 40 yards. And finally, Jack turns around and he waves at me. He said, come on, Luke. Come on, Tom. Come on up here. Walk up here with me. And he said, no, you take your final bow, Jack. That's what I'm thinking. He said, no, come here, like this. So I get up there, and he puts his arm around me, and he sees I'm crying. I said, get a hold of yourself, Watson. You still have a tournament to play. I had to make a par in the last hole to make the cut. Jack was thinking about me.
Wow.
That is incredible, amazing. Isn't it? That is amazing. Just incredible. And listening to you speak, Tom, about some of those moments, they're obviously incredibly special to you. But I know that all of those moments, there was live TV footage, there was people listening to the radio. You've given so many millions of golf fans so much. And just from a personal, I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart and all the listeners' heart, because you've meant the world to so many of us. You know, you know my middle name being Tom, you've meant so much to my family and the Open family and the golf family. You've done an amazing job. You've been a fantastic ambassador for this game. And just to have you sat there and me have the opportunity to thank you so much for everything that you've done.
That's very kind of you, Matt. Thank you.
We really appreciate your time, Tom. I know you have to go. A lot of people want to talk to you, but you've mentioned Padraig Harrington as your dark horse.
My dark horse.
For this week. Who's your favorite to go on and lift that claret jug that you know so well?
Well, I picked Rory McIlroy and Matthew Fitzpatrick this week. Matthew's struggled the first round, but there's time in the second round to make up some ground.
Fantastic. Great pleasure to meet you, Tom.
Thank you. Enjoy
the rest of your weekend here at St. Andrews. That is the five-time Open champion, Tom Watson. What an absolute treat for all of us here in our cozy little studio, which is just a 9-iron away from the first tee.